Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I represent Adam Peterson. This case is about a deal. Our position is a deal, and that's not what took place here. Adam Peterson entered into a plea agreement with the government. He gave up his substantial right to trial by jury. The agreement specifically stated that the government agreed, he accepted responsibility, and that at sentencing they would present their position that the offense level in this case was a 15, indicating an offense guideline range sentencing of 18 to 24 months. At sentencing, the government didn't do that. They came in and claimed that by virtue of a piece of paper that was sent to probation by me and the words I chose, that he, one, no longer accepted responsibility, two, obstructed justice, and as a result of that, his offense level now should be offense level 20, in which the sentencing range was 33 to 41 months. And ultimately, that's exactly what took place. The trial judge sentenced him to 41 months. In addition, at sentencing, the government introduced all sorts of evidence that was not relevant conduct. They introduced evidence about Mr. Peterson's conduct with his wife, his failure to pay attorney's fees, a check that he had misappropriated years earlier, and on and on. What's important, I think, for the court to realize is that at the sentencing hearing, Rachel Cannon, who was the assistant state's attorney at the district attorney at the time, specifically told the trial court, "Judge, we anticipated this, that he might come in and say, I thought I was going to have a loan. We thought that the loan was imminent. We anticipated this because we knew that had been his position during the course of trial." That's at page 11 of the transcript. It's a very important concept to understand. Here the government knew and anticipated that he would be consistent and maintain, "That's what I thought. In retrospect, obviously, there was not going to be a loan. I accept full responsibility for my conduct." Under Grimm, this court had ruled earlier that if, in fact, a government is now trying to change positions, it can't be upon evidence that was available at the time that they entered into the plea agreement. There's no issue in this case that at the time the government entered into the plea agreement with Mr. Peterson, they were aware of the fact that he had consistently maintained the position, "I was wrong, but I was in the process of negotiating these loans. I thought it would happen." There's nothing new in this case. There's nothing that was developed subsequent to the time in which they had this interview with him, placed a telephone call, recorded the conversation. The whole premise here and the pretext, in my view, of the government now coming in and telling the trial judge that there should be a total different deal is based upon words I used. I sent my version based upon what I read in the reports, the government furnished documents, that I thought under these circumstances he accepted responsibility, but he thought he was still in the process of negotiating these loans and to get a loan. That's the whole basis of what they did. That's the whole basis of the government coming in and now claiming, no, he's no longer entitled to acceptance of responsibility. And moreover, he's also guilty of obstruction, not based upon anything he said, not based upon anything that he did, not based upon his testimony, but based upon an attribution of words I used in writing a letter to the probation department. This is a case where I think it's clear that Mr. Peterson did not get the bargain he in fact made. The government changed positions after, in fact, the bargain was met, the plea agreement was entered, he went before Judge Koukouras, told the judge that he accepted responsibility, the government agreed he accepted responsibility, and then basically changed everything at sentencing.
And if he thought that he was going to get this $100 million loan, what would be the fraud?
Well, the fraud was is that he didn't have it, and he told...
Now, wait a second. He didn't have what?
He didn't have the money.
That's not a fraud. What's the what is
the fraud, Judge, is when he told the processing company he had the money. He admitted that. He said, "I admit I was fraudulent. I committed a crime."
And he thought he would get it.
Correct. He thought he, even though it was wrong to do it, and he admitted he did it wrong, he said, "Well, I thought I was going to get this money." I'm not saying that, in fact, he was going to get the money, but I think it's clear that that's what he considered. That's what he thought. The government admitted That's what he had said throughout this entire case. So for the government to flip its position on the theory that I reasserted the same thing that they knew about...
Well, the imminence, of course, is significant, right? Because the fraud would be much attenuated if he honestly believed that within a day or so he'd have the money. That would be relatively less harmful than if this was just pie in the sky.
I agree, Judge, that's true. But again, now we're talking about someone's mindset. And what I was simply doing...
Yeah, of course, when you used the word imminent, you were making representation about his mindset.
I think that's right. But all I did was take the same thing he had told the government...
And you decorated it a little.
Well, I may have. I rue the day I used that word, but I certainly did not...
He's stuck with what you said.
I don't think there's anything in the cases that I've seen here that suggests that he can be guilty of obstruction for the word I chose. I mean, he didn't do anything. I mean, there's nothing that the government has come forward and said that here's a basis that he could be guilty of obstruction. I used a word that I thought was based upon the documents he presented to me, based upon the position he had taken, based upon the government's position that they said, yeah, that's what he said all along. We know that. We know that, in fact, that's the position he's taken. We don't agree with it. We don't think he was objectively right. But here was a guy, business failed, and he, I'm sure, pie in the sky, thought I could make it right. And he didn't. But in fact, Judge, he told the judge, Kokoros, he's guilty. The government agreed in its position in the plea agreement that he, in fact, admitted it, that he was entitled to acceptance of responsibility. And I think that the significant conduct that was not relevant, that was admitted, affected the way Judge Kokoros looked at this case. And he says that basically right in the actual transcript, if you look at it. Any questions at all, Your Honor? Thank you. I yield my time.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Mr. Ferrara?
May it please the Court, on behalf of the United States, my name is Michael Ferrara. The sentence imposed below in this matter should stand. A complete reading of the record on appeal.
Is imminent all you have, or do you have something beyond that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Support the obstruction of justice and denial of acceptance of responsibility.
Yes, Your Honor. To address your first concern with the word imminent, as defense counsel has clearly pointed out, the assertion is that his choice of the word imminent was somehow seized upon by the government in the court below as the reason behind this obstruction and the reason behind his failure to continue to accept responsibility. This argument misses the mark, as it was not the choice of words chosen by counsel, but rather the idea behind them. As noted by the court below, there was simply no reasonable basis whatsoever for the defendant to believe that a loan was forthcoming in the foreseeable future at all, much less a $100 million recapitalization loan from a lender that was not even in the business of providing such loans. The court held that this argument was simply smoke and mirrors with no reasonable basis, and the court found, in fact, that these assertions claiming that a loan was coming so far removed the defendant from accepting responsibility from his actions as to constitute an obstruction of justice. So it's the overall notion of advancing this theory at all, as opposed to any choice of words by counsel, that resulted in his failure to accept responsibility. To state that either the government or the court below placed any undue emphasis on counsel's words misses another greater point, which is that all this information...
What about his complaint that you brought in stuff about his treatment of his wife?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's the relevance of that?
To address the fact as to whether or not this was relevant conduct, the record is unequivocal on that point. Both counsel for defendant, counsel for the government, and the court all clearly state in the record that none of that information was considered as relevant conduct. Rather, it was considered as aggravating evidence under Section 3553. This was proper, Your Honor, as soon as the defendant failed to continue to accept responsibility.
How does his wife get involved in this?
Your Honor, his wife gets involved through a civil proceeding that was going on. There's statements in the record that the defendant misled his wife as to why she was being summoned to a civil proceeding in court. That evidence was offered in aggravation to show the defendant's prior record of deceit in dealing with certain matters. In addition, in aggravation, another embezzlement was set forth in which the defendant received a large amount of money from a financial institution that was actually intended for another person. And rather than...
Why wouldn't that be relevant conduct?
Your Honor, it was outside of the scope of this particular embezzlement within his case. The previous one involved a former business partner that the defendant and the business partner went separate ways. The money was actually entitled...
It's odd to have all this non-relevant conduct brought in and used to jack up his sentence.
And, Your Honor, when the plea agreement was entered into by the government, as indicated in the provision that the defendant needed to continue to accept responsibility, it was clear that from just reading the agreement on his face, the defendant was accepting the criminal nature of his contract or of his conduct. When he failed to do that by setting forth this argument that had absolutely no basis in reality, that he believed alone...
That's a different issue. I'm not asking about that. I'm asking about whether it's proper to use a lot of non-relevant conduct to jack up a sentence after a plea agreement.
In this instance, yes, Your Honor. In this instance, it was not used as relevant conduct, as I indicated. It was used as aggravating evidence.
Yes, is that proper?
In this instance, it is, Your Honor.
If something isn't relevant conduct, you'd think it wouldn't be used. It wouldn't be used to increase the sentence unless it was, you know, the obstruction of justice, your first point. But the fact that there are other embezzlements and is misleading his wife, if it's not relevant conduct, why should it be germane?
It's germane under 3553, Your Honor, in that the court should properly consider the...
But that's very vague. I mean, what are plea agreements worth if you can go into the judge and say, well, true, there's no relevant conduct or this or that. No, I must say there's no obstruction of justice, but there's all this stuff suggesting, you know, under the very vague criteria of 3553A, he should get a heavier sentence.
And you're correct, Your Honor. In fact, plea agreements would be worthless if both sides did not live up to their ends of the bargain. In this case, the contract of the plea agreement is undeniably clear as to what was expected from the defendant. When the defendant failed to continue to accept responsibility, all of the rest of that information then did become germane to apprise the court below as to the past history of the defendant.
Why would
he's
committing
character.
Another embezzlement show he didn't accept responsibility for this one?
Your Honor, in setting forth the argument that the defendant believed that this loan was forthcoming that would enable him to easily repay ADP for the money that was taken, the defendant is essentially stating that this was not some egregious criminal matter, but rather something akin to bad management on his part, that he believed this loan was coming and he could immediately pay it back.
Going back to the first point, my question was, what is the second embezzlement, the other embezzlement that you brought up at sentencing, have to do with his accepting responsibility for this fraud?
Your Honor, it would go directly to the fact that the defendant didn't reasonably believe that this other loan was forthcoming. It clearly shows that this particular defendant...
What was the second embezzlement?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What was the new embezzlement?
The new embezzlement was the defendant directing one of his employees to contact ADP and have them deposit a certain amount of money into the payroll account of the defendant's corporation. The defendant, when he did this, was well aware that they did not have the money to pay ADP back. So that act of taking money from ADP that he knew well he did not have the money to return was an embezzlement of those funds.
But this wasn't part of the plea agreement.
That in fact, was, Your Honor.
If I keep asking you, you keep saying there was another embezzlement.
Oh, and I...
For the 3553A enhancement.
The 3553 embezzlement, Your Honor, was the embezzlement that occurred prior in time, which is where money was transferred by mistake to the defendant, and rather than alert the financial institution that made the mistake.
How did that event relate to his acceptance of responsibility for this fraud?
But once again, Your Honor, that goes directly to the fact that the defendant clearly knew what he was doing when he advanced that argument to the court below, that he believed this loan was forthcoming. The fact that in his past he had taken money that did not belong to him clearly shows that the fact that he believed this $100 million, there was no reasonable way that he believed this $100 million loan was forthcoming.
Acceptance of responsibility.
Your Honor, in order for the defendant to be afforded acceptance of responsibility and for the government to make that recommendation, he needs to go beyond just pleading guilty. He needs to take full accountability for his actions. When the defendant advances this argument that, yes, I did this, yes, I took the money when we didn't have the money to pay it back, but it was only because I thought this loan was forthcoming, that deceives the court. And this other conduct that was introduced under 3553A goes to bolster that fact that the defendant knew what he was doing and knew that his actions were criminal. And in advancing an argument otherwise, he was failing to accept responsibility.
So everything really comes back to this argument that he thought he was going to get a loan. That's what all this stuff is about.
Yes, Your Honor. A Secret Service investigation was conducted into this loan. All of those materials regarding that investigation that proved that no loan was forthcoming were tendered to the defendant in the discovery process. When the defendant then advanced that argument at sentencing, he was advancing it at his own peril. He was advancing it knowing that both he and the government knew this information to be false. When he did go ahead and advance that to the court below and to the probation department, he was failing at that point to accept responsibility for his criminal conduct.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Farrar. Mr. Martinkus, how much time? He has several minutes. Yeah.
Judge, that argument was rejected by Grimm. Grimm states there has to be new evidence. This is a case where the state or the government says specifically, we knew that's what he said. And yet, while they knew it, they entered into a plea agreement in which they specifically said he accepts responsibility. We fully acknowledge it. For them to come forward then at sentencing and say, wait a second, he's telling you again that he knew that he thought there was a loan forthcoming. That was the same information they knew, but they entered into the plea agreement anyway.
But you could have a situation, defendant says to the government, no, I thought I was going to get a loan. And then they have the plea agreement, which he confesses, you know, fraud and everything like that. So if he then persists in his initial assertion, he's violating the agreement.
Judge, I agree with you. But under Purchase, that was a case in which this court said, well, and this in the brief, that the defendant didn't come forward and really enunciate the fact that he was truly sorry and accept responsibility, and that we can't simply impute those words of his attorney. Here, in that case, they talked about also the attorney for the defendant making arguments at sentencing in contrary to what was in the pre-sentence report. And the Purchase court, your court specifically said that in that particular situation, it should be incumbent upon the trial court to make a decision. Is this, in fact, the position that the defendant himself is taking? There's nothing in the record on that. Mr. Peterson was never asked a simple question, is that what happened? Do you still believe that? If you look at the Carroll case, which is from this court as well, that was a case in which this same sort of argument took place, but there he overestimated his assets. And the court in those cases talk about if it has something to do with his mental state and an exaggeration of his mental position, that in and of itself is not a basis for not accepting responsibility and not a basis to, in fact, conclude that he, in fact, he imputed justice and so forth. So there's no basis for it, Your Honor. This was a deal. He cut the deal. The government had every information at the time they entered into it. He did nothing. I wrote a letter to the probation officer telling the probation officer what, in fact, his position had been based upon the information provided me to by the government. It's circular. It's just not fair. Cases from this district talk about fairness in these deals. He didn't get the benefit of his bargain. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Martinkus and Mr. Farrar. And the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.